Hey, yo, y'all already know what it is. This is my first case podcast, and today we're going to take a little different approach. You know, we usually interview ex-offenders, but, you know, I think this will make for a nice episode. We got an ex-county correctional officer in here, my man's good dude. I had the pleasure of meeting, you know what I'm saying, my guy P. So, you know, he going to go on here, he going to share his stories. We're just going to build how we build on this podcast, and we're going to give it to you in an organic fashion, and he's going to let you know from his point of view, you know, what he's seen and what he's been through as a correctional officer, and, you know what I'm saying, dealing with felons in real life on the streets, you know, because he's a real life dude, you know what I'm saying, that's just, you know, the gig don't mean nothing. But, you know, here go my guy, P.A., man, welcome to the podcast.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
No doubt.
P, first of all, I want to take a moment to thank you for agreeing to this interview. It's an honor to have you on my first case. Again, like you said, it's a little different.
Oh, yeah.
We're switching it up. But I think it's very, very intricate. Your story, your input is important. And I think our audience would be definitely interested to see your viewpoint.
I appreciate it. I mean, I know it ain't my first case, but I've seen a lot of people catch their first cases.
Wow. So, speaking of that, then, you've seen a lot of people catch their first case, as you said. Tell us a little bit about your job. Like,
what I used to do? Well, I worked in corrections for about 13 years.
Okay.
8 years with the sheriff's department. Uh-huh. And about five years within the rehabilitation system, the halfway houses, where people come home from prison, federal prisons, and things like that, you know, the reentry programs.
Okay.
So I see them go, I see them come home.
Wow. So for our audience, can you elaborate on a halfway house? This is...
Well, a halfway house is a residential corrections facility for when offenders come home maybe early from their prison sentence, and they may have to do anywhere between 3 to 6 to 9 months there. They leave out and go to work throughout the day if they get a job, and they go on weekend passes. Sometimes they go on daily passes. They get to go to the doctor. They got, you know, regular visits from family members and things like that. They wear their regular clothes. They got their own lockers with their clothes and all their toiletries, things that you don't have inside the prison system.
Okay. So it's like a transition from the institution to the community.
Yes.
Okay. So I'd like to hear a little bit about your time working with the sheriff's department. Which I know, according to research, there was the capacity of the facility that you worked at was 1,700. There was over 2,000 there. That's the average daily population. I brought those figures up because one of the first things I wanted to know was, did you feel overwhelmed? Part one. Part two, I guess this is a similar question. Go ahead.
Okay, so I don't forget what you just said about the population. 1,700 was about the capacity, but at times we had 2,500 inmates.
Wow.
So, you know, not enough cells, not enough bunks. So they made pallets on the floor. So you may have 30 cells inside of a pod. Out of the 30 cells, 27 of them may be single man cells because they're only small enough. It's as big as a bathroom. Mm-hmm. And then you had two cells that may be three man cells. So three guys be able to sleep in there. Bunks, I mean, pallets, like pillows and stuff they laid on the floor at night.
So it was outside of the cell and not in the cell?
No, it wasn't nothing secure. So if I was, you know, during count time, you usually have, it's around 9:45 at night.
Uh-huh.
if somebody worked third shift, bathroom, yeah. You know, and you're right in the middle of it.
And they could jump off.
Anytime.
So, did these inmates, like, they had a pallet, like, so during count time, you know, I'm familiar with it. I'm just trying to, you know. So, were these inmates allowed off of there? Because they outside of the cells, right?
Yeah.
They in the pod on the floor.
Right.
It's like a dorm atmosphere, which it shouldn't be.
Right.
So, are they allowed off of the pallets to move around, or how does that work?
No, they were, well, the rules are, is to basically, like you in school, raise your hand and ask, can you go to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Especially after hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I treated the guys more like adults than kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I gave them chances. I, you know, pretty much gave them all the rope they needed.
Right. And now we're going to get into that, too, because, you know what I'm saying, I know that you we talked. We built on some of the situations in there, you know what I'm saying. You was one of the better correction officers. You know, guys would like to see you, you know what I'm saying, coming. You know what I'm saying? Because you was more for your people's type of guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you was one of the better COs to see. You know, you had, you know, we all know you had your buttholes. And, you know, you was one of the better COs to see. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to get into that about, you know,
right
down the line. But, first and foremost, I want to ask this because you were saying something about the halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you're seeing guys come and go. Wow. So this will transition into the next question. So when you're seeing guys come from a federal prison or a state prison, did you see guys trying to get better, or did you see like guys who were, nah, he ain't going to make it. He on the same thing. He trying to get to it already.
Coming home from prison, you could tell by the guys how they're going to be after they get their first pass. When I say their first pass, that means go out into the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you may have a guy that he just did maybe about 10 or 15 years in prison for maybe a drug conspiracy or something like that. But he... Well, before he went down, he was making hundreds of thousands of dollars. So he comes home, and now, you know, you got your friends picking you up. They got the flashy cars and everything. And you back at scratch. But, you know, they want you to get you a job.
Mm-hmm.
They don't teach you any trades or any type of skills or anything. You got to go get a job. You got to go to work at McDonald's. You got to work at Walmart. You got to work somewhere that was never accustomed to your lifestyle. So, and then you still kind of come in and give them 20% up of your check.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
So now, you know, their friends is giving them more than what their check was. Hey, man, you fresh home here, you go, man, go 1,000, man. Man, I miss you, go 1,000. So they looking at it like, how can you just easily get me up 1,000?
Yeah.
So some of them came home scared straight. Some came home said, it didn't do nothing but made me a bigger and better criminal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think I could beat the system again this time.
So, would you say that under those conditions, as far as, like you said, coming home, them having to get a job and they don't have the experience, they don't give them any training or anything like that, that the conditions were unrealistic, like the expectations,
they were set up for failure? Very, very unrealistic. Very, it all set up for failure.
Okay.
You know, the mission to one of the halfway houses was to reduce recidivism.
Mm-hmm.
Recidivism is, you know, repeating, coming back into the system.
You talk about that a lot on here.
Yeah, so...
A cycle.
Yeah, so... but you got to understand, though, when the counselors that these guys are assigned to must really get into knowing who these guys are and who they were.
Mm-hmm.
Before they can just push them out, like, okay, we'll go get you a job, bring in 20%, and that's all. You know, some of these guys, they go to prison and they got 4, 5, 6 kids when they come home.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been talking to their children the whole time they've been locked up. This is what daddy gonna do for you when I come home, and we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. But they can't do it because now they're getting pushed from Uncle Sam and the prison system still. But so they teach them how to fill out applications, but they don't bring in electrical classes, carpentry classes, mechanical classes.
Offer no trades.
No trades or anything. So so now they say either work this job or take this pack from a guy.
Yeah, and the job that they got to work is probably $8-$9 and they taking 20% of that. It's like, what the?
I know, because you come in, all that time you did, you know, you might have been in touch a little bit with what was going on in the world, mm-hmm. but now you actually out here and you see the stuff going past you. You see the fashion don't change. You see the cars don't change. The women don't change. Mm-hmm. So now you trying to play catch up. And when you play catch up, you trip up.
Mm-hmm. Trip up?
You trip up.
That's how Yeah, that's what we talk about, the recidivism rate. That's why it's so high. That's a part of it. So yeah. That ties into that. So I got a question for you. that was on the county. That was on the halfway house side of the situation.
Yeah.
I want to go to the county. So I want to ask you, all right, as a correctional officer in the county jail, when you seen guys, because, you know, everybody has to be a good judge of character. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, did you see guys that were like fish out of water that didn't belong with some of these criminals? Did you see hardcore criminals who come in like, oh, he might have got out on bond, but shit, you went home for 2 days and he back. You know what I'm saying? Did you see them returning and they right there at the spade table? They right there doing push-ups. You know what I'm saying? They acclimation. That's what I want to ask you. Are they, you know what I'm saying? You got repeat offenders that's easily acclimated. They get their shower and oranges and they good. Give me my cell and they good. As opposed to someone, you can look at their face and like, they shook. Like, this ain't where, you know what I'm saying? Give me a little bite of that.
Well, a lot of the guys, in my 8 years working in a county, I put you like this. I work 12-hour shifts, right? 12-hour shifts. And I work 4 days a week. So a lot of times I'll tell guys like this, hey, I done did 4 years in prison. Because half of my day was working inside these walls. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times through the 8 years, I've seen people come back every 6 months.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It depends on the type of crimes you committed. The ones I see come back every 6 months, it be more petty crimes, like a drug possession. Somebody that has a drug problem,
mm-hmm.
or somebody that's nickel and diamond out here in the way of the police. You don't see the big time guys come back every few months.
Right,
some of them don't even make it to the county.
Exactly.
You know, so they got the money to bond straight out. They fighting their cases from the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So when those type of guys come in, the more petty crimes,
mm-hmm.
they give us the hardest times.
Oh yeah,
we get the hardest times. The best inmates is the ones that know how to do their time or know the consequences of what they did, so they're not taking it out on us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't put you in here. I'm just doing the job.
Exactly. And since you said you was doing time, like, you know, that's I gotta tie it into some of what I know about you, you know what I'm saying? So we didn't build, we talked about the shebangs, we talked about you might get bored, play a little cards with the guys, you know what I'm saying? So let me hear you. I heard you done took the goodies and shit from guys in the county.
No,
let's talk about the shebang chips first.
Okay. Well.
Because tell them about shebang, because you can get them out here, well, but you, tell them back then you couldn't
you
get
can
them.
Get them. You can get them out here now, but before, it's a chip. They call shebangs.
Potato chip.
The potato chip has every flavor in one chip. So when you bite it, it's like shebang.
Oh, wow.
But I never tasted it until I started working at the county.
Mm-hmm.
So I ain't been to college, right? But working there, I got a few degrees. I got some degrees in sociology. I wasn't a correctional officer. I was a caseworker. I was more. I had 96 guys on my pod at one time, and some of them I seen for 6 months straight. So I knew these guys first and last name.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to question who they was, nothing. So it was times I got bored. You know, I come in at 6 a.m. You know, I might nap a little bit, get up. Now everybody at the day area, they playing spades, cutthroat. I sit down and I play. Hey, let me play. CEO, you ain't supposed to be playing. Hey, you telling on me? I just watch my back. I got right. some goodies.
Right.
So we sit down. Now I got to come up with a wager with goodies that I don't have that they have in their room, which is their commissary. So I go to the vending machine and I get stuff they can't get, like Starburst and gum and Pepsi's.
So your stuff was like high end. They was at your bag. Yeah, they're like, we want that.
One pack of Starburst was like 3 or 4 goodies that they had for me.
So did you charge them accordingly, or did you just treat that your Starburst to one of their cookies?
No, it wasn't even.
It wasn't even. No, so you knew it. All right, all right.
Because I was taking a bigger risk.
You knew. So all right, exactly. All right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was taking a risk, bringing it in again. If they get caught with it, then the supervisor want to know how in the hell did they get Starburst in here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was times I went in there. And in the beginning, when I first really started learning how to play, I knew how to play. But the best card players and dominoes players is in the prison. Just like it's a player better than LeBron James and Michael Jordan that's locked up, never got that chance. Mm-hmm. I got my ass whooped a few times. But also, now I become a card shark. So the times I got whooped, I've actually had to go. Just to cancel with that, I may have lost 30 or 40 goodies to one guy because I kept going. So just to cancel the debt, I'll bring him in a corned beef sandwich.
Oh.
Yeah.
He was in heaven. Corned beef and a Pepsi. Zab, he's been in the county 9 months.
Yeah, that's luxury.
So, you know, it's better than the sweat meat that they served.
Sweat meat.
So it was times.
Wait, I know her. I know her. She won't define sweat meat.
Sweat meat is it was I don't know where it come from, what it was, but it looked like a piece of bologna or ham mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
It was very cold, but it had perspiration dripping from it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So they called it sweat meat.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it early in the morning for breakfast with an egg and something else.
Okay.
So the corned beef sandwich was like caviar.
Street food, when you locked up anything from the streets he was winning, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would have probably been trying to gamble you, too.
Oh, yeah, so the 30 goodies got canceled out, you know what I'm saying? If I had to give them 30 goodies, that's $30, maybe mm-hmm. 40, depending on what it was. So I took $7 and bought a corned beef. So, but it was times that I won 30, 40, 50 goodies. Now I got to go home at the end of the day. I can't leave with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I went to all the poorest inmates in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave them the goodies. Wow. 10 goodies apiece. Say if I come in tomorrow and need a brownie, man, look out for them. Here you go. Boom. But the shebangs, what I did was, because I had to let my girl and my son and everybody else taste them on the outside. They haven't been locked up. The only time you can eat them when you're locked up.
Tell them, wait, let the masses know that shebangs are not sold on the streets. You can only get shebangs. Well, they're sold on the streets now because of the prison culture and how, like we talked about, recidivism and all that, people going and coming from prison. So the Arabs got hip to shebangs, and they sell them out here now. Right. But in these times, you couldn't get a shebang chip on the streets. They were only in correctional facilities and so forth.
Yeah, they call it on commissary inside the prisons, they're $2 a bag. But here on the streets, they're $6 a bag. So, you know, I've heard guys going to stores, guys that used that's ex-inmates and everything else going to stores, and I'm in there buying my chips. They say, man, well, y'all got your bags? Yeah, we got your bags. How much is it? $6 or 2 for $10. He said, man, it only costs $2 in the county. I said, well, go back to the county and get them.
Oh,
wow. Well, you know what you got to do to get them for that price? So when I won my shebangs and I want to take them home, so I can't walk out with them, so I deflated the bag, smashed up the chips, and I put them down in my drawers, and I walked on out with them.
Wow.
See, what I learned that because the inmates, what they used to do was they'd take the bag and smash it up too. Mm-hmm. And the shebangs were so good that they used it for seasoning on their breaks.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, they was. And, like, you can do a lot with shebangs. You can bring a whole meal alive. That's okay. From my experience. So, go ahead. You got a question?
Yes. I'd like to bring it back to the sweat meat. Okay.
No, I never ate none.
Okay. Well, that brings me to this concern. There is some recent, I'm not sure if you've been watching the news, but some recent allegations of issues that has been going on with the county as far as civil rights violations. And one of them was bugs in the food, deny access to health care, lacking the basics like toilet paper. You already mentioned being forced to sleep on the floor, broken toilets, and there has also been like 8 deaths in the last 7 months. Can you comment on that?
Well, it wasn't that bad. Well, I can't say it wasn't that bad when I was there. That many people didn't die when I worked there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was there when, LeVert, Sean LeVert.
Yeah, you was there at the time? Yeah,
I wasn't working at the time. But that was my error.
Okay.
That was my error. Mm-hmm. And it was maybe a few other days.
Was that accidental with Sean LeVert? I don't know the story. So was that was it a medication thing?
I think it was something with medication. He was in a restraint chair. Uh-huh. So I think he had anxiety, and he may have had a heart attack or something, but he needed his medication.
Yeah.
Okay, so for those that's not familiar, Sean LeVert is actually from a R&B group called LeVert. Mm-hmm. They originated in Cleveland, but they were internationally known, renowned duo.
Yeah, but it wasn't that many. When I was working, now the things that I used to do, when I worked there, for playing cards with the inmates or, lacking on my job, period. They got cameras there now. So that's why you see, if you look at the paper and stuff every day, it's an inmate, it's a CO being charged with assault on an inmate because everything's being caught on camera.
Mm-hmm. Cameras
were only in the hallways. Mm-hmm. They never made it into the dorm areas. Because because the thing is, you got to understand, the county jail is only for guys that's going to court. Nobody's actually sentenced there except probably misdemeanors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of guys' privacy had to be protected due to their cases. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of high-profile people that was down there. You had just imagine if he had a camera in his pod and just watching him walk around all day.
Yep. And the thing about it is the camera, it was brought in for certain reasons, but the camera, like, it changed the game. Yeah. Would you say that?
Well, it was supposed to protect both the inmate and the correctional officer. Mm-hmm. But now more, you know, it's protecting the inmates, and that's supposed to be fair, you know. And just like any business, and you know, the inmates are like, they're like cattle. That's what they call it. It's like cattle. It's like this stock. If you don't have the inmates, you don't have a business. Wow. So the inmates are always right. The correction officer is never right in the case as when I was working. Mm-hmm. It's, if he needed, contact me. Don't deny him because he has his rights. And that's true. Right. That's your rights.
So do you agree with having the cameras?
Do I agree with
it? Do you feel like that was something that was necessary? Like, has it improved the function of the facilities, or do you feel like it...
Well, here you go right here. I don't agree with having the cameras on my behalf because that job wasn't for me.
All right, okay. I'm going to cut him off a little bit because he said something about a need. I know the guy. I gotta get this on here. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you probably don't know this, Keisha, but my guy right here, you know, you said a need. So sometimes inmates have certain needs, you know what I'm saying? Right. And certain needs can be beneficial to certain people.
Right.
You know, so I know you capitalized off a certain need of inmates, you know, maybe it being nicotine products, maybe it being whatever you want to call it right now. Would you care to elaborate on where I'm going a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can because nothing I did was criminal. It wasn't a felony, anything worth catching a felony for. It was all work disciplinary.
Actually, okay, yeah.
So, there's in the county jail, the smoking is prohibited.
Okay.
I actually made more money selling cigarettes there than I did actually made collecting a check.
Yeah.
It was just simple. You get a pack of cigarettes for, at the time, they were maybe less than $5. At the time, it was only like $2 or $3.
How much would you sell a pack of cigarettes to an inmate for? How much would you get for that?
You get $50 for a pack.
So that was very profitable.
Yeah, very profitable.
Who wouldn't be enticed by that?
Yeah, so I mean,
just imagine
going to Super Kmart at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you buy a whole carton, which is 10 10 packs in a carton for $23. Mm-hmm. And you turn around and sell that whole carton for
$500. Wow.
But you're doing four of those a week.
Mm. It's pretty decent money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, $2,000 a week.
Yeah, on top of, you know,
yeah,
on top of your shebangs and all that.
My question then is, like, you $2,000 a week, did they have, like, cash on them and just give it to you? Like, here is $5 for this one cigarette. Like, how did that?
If an inmate had cash on him, he was the police.
Okay.
The sheriffs or the supervisors put him in there to set you up. So, a lot of times you meet with their people. Hey, my brother got a car wash. My brother got a barbershop. My brother gonna be here. My girlfriend gonna be there. My sister gonna be here. Okay, cool.
My mom gonna be here.
Because, all right, imagine this. You in there for 6 months to a year. And he's in there for 6 months to a year. You as his wife, mother, sister, or whatever the case may be. He's calling you, hey, I need some money on my books. So you going out and putting $50 a week on his commissary. That's $200 a month on his commissary. So he can buy goodies, snacks. Hygiene, most important.
Mm-hmm.
But the snacks come in handy because you got stuff like sweat meat that you want to supplement that for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if he gets a one pack of cigarettes for $50, he might not never need you to put them on money on his commissary ever again. Because just like in the streets, the big time dope boys, they accumulate so much money and so much materialistic stuff, the police know who you are. So just like in a county, if you're inmate and you're selling cigarettes, if you're stupid, the other COs, they know who you are when they walk into your room. Mm-hmm. Because you got a wall full of goodies.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no statements of going to commissary in the last 3 months. So the smart inmate that's making all his money will pay the broke inmates like a bank. Hey, watch 30 of my goodies for me. You can have 2 goodies a day. Or maybe even a roll-up cigarette. So what they did with the cigarettes was, once they got the pack, which was 20 cigarettes in a pack.
Yeah.
If you take one cigarette and you bust it down, and the kind of they use, the toilet paper wrapper,
as tissue, right? As a roll of tobacco
up in there.
Okay.
So you take one cigarette and you break it down into the toilet paper wrappers. Out of one cigarette, you can make about 4 to 8 roll-ups. And you're getting 2 to 3 goodies per roll-up.
Wow.
Now you got 19 more cigarettes to do like that.
Mm-hmm. So they don't have to pay for no goodies. They don't have to call upon their peoples. They just did a $50 transaction with you.
Yep.
They deal with the inmates, get the goodies through the system.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so you like to plug.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's...
It got hectic because we were assigned to certain floors for 6 months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got four pods on each floor. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4. If you dealt with everybody, then they got out of hand. So you actually had to stay under the radar and you deal with like maybe two people, one on each side.
Okay.
You know, if you was really smart and wasn't greedy, you know, you could deal with one person and give them the whole thing, the whole carton, and he deals with everybody else and you're not even seen. So you're getting a $2,000 from this person. And he distributes it. May even throughout the jail. How he gets through the jail is another story.
Okay. So do you think, I mean, outside of yourself, do you think, I mean, it's not, I mean, you was doing it, so do you think or do you know other officers that was doing it as well?
Of course. I mean, all right, put it to you like this. Me and a good friend of mine, we actually got arrested down there.
Arrested?
We got arrested for actually not for what they charged us with, because what they charged us with, it was a type of entrapment.
Mm-hmm.
They did a sweep on the pods one time, and a cell phone came up on the inmate.
Okay.
So now this is bigger than cigarettes. This is accessory to escape. So they brought the detectives in, and detectives questioned the first shift COs, the inmates, and the second shift COs. So it was a CO that worked first shift that they wasn't too fond about. He always was at his desk on his cell phone. He was the type of CO that would give them cigarettes and bust them with it.
Wow.
You know, so they actually told him.
The inmates told on the CO?
Told on the CO.
Because he was kind of corrupt.
Because he was corrupt.
Yeah.
So, so they questioned him. He went into the detective's office. They questioned him, and they told him, hey, what's up with the cell phone? He said, I don't know about no cell phone, but I know who do. I know who bringing in drugs.
Wow.
So he pointed the finger towards me and my partner. We were never selling no drugs or anything inside that jail, nor outside the jail. Mm-hmm. Even though people thought we was, because we was making the type of money that you can make selling drugs from selling cigarettes.
Right.
So they set it up for my guy to meet one of the guys that he usually deals with peoples outside before we come to work. And inside the pack of cigarettes that they had with the undercover, they slid it open just enough and put two blunts inside of it.
Oh, wow.
Wait, excuse me, I'm sorry, Keisha. Were you getting the cigarettes from the inmates' peoples?
Yeah, this wasn't me in this case.
Okay.
It wasn't me in this case. I was with him. We were coming from the store. I actually would have been charged. I didn't get charged because I actually would have got charged with him if I stopped and spoke to the undercover with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was still walking. I didn't know who he was talking to.
Okay.
I turned around and said, come on, we're going to be late. Catch up.
Did he have that pack of cigarettes on him at the time?
No, he got it from the person. See, because it was set up. He didn't put the weed in there.
I know. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? They gave it to him and the $50, which was marked.
Oh, wow.
So as we walked in to go to work, you know, we was young. This was maybe 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. We was young. So we come to work, jeans, you know, fresh tee. I had a chain down to my with the diamonds on it, with the world on it, and you know, New York fitted had Air Force Ones, and I got about $1,000 of cash in my pocket.
There's nothing wrong with it.
So we didn't look like the ordinary correction officers. So when we go inside the locker room, they swarmed us. Boom, get on the floor. Whoa, 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 whoa. Guns to our heads and everything. So me and him face to face. What the hell going on? They cuff us, take us back to the center. We go up to the third floor, narcotics unit. What the hell are we here for? They put the weed in there. They made an illegal conveyance into a correction facility. So he was charged with the illegal conveyance, and he got a felony for that. He didn't do any jail time. He got probation.
Mm-hmm.
But he lost his job. I was able to keep my job, and I worked there for another 6 years. Now, back to the question you asked, do you think there's other correctional officers doing it? I stopped doing it after that.
Okay.
You learned your lesson.
Yeah, I stopped. So now, being that I stopped, just like in the streets, if somebody get caught in the streets, it's a void to fill. Mm-hmm. Somebody else wanted that money.
Hell yeah.
You know, and the inmate who was getting it, see that he couldn't do it with us no more, so he approached somebody else. Mm-hmm. The next CO probably learned a little better lesson from us, you know, things that we was doing wrong. So, yeah, but it's been times, it's been correctional officers been arrested for bringing the actual drugs and
cell phones.
Stings outside of the jail that they, you know, it may be an inmate and they're facing a long time. And he may be working with the DEA. Mm-hmm. And the DEA asked him, hey, set up a couple correctional officers for us. Hey, tell them you got $200,000 somewhere and you can't get to it, but you need them to go get it for your bond money, this, is that, and other. And the CO go in there, and then as soon as you go in there, he get caught. The money in there and drugs and everything else.
So would you find that would be like newer COs who wasn't, you know, like hip to...
Oh, no, it's veterans. People veterans? That have been there 20, 30 years that have been caught up like that.
Wow.
You know, the newer COs... See, okay, when I first started working, the reason I say I was thankful for working there because it was a lot of good experiences and I met a lot of good people. I was by working there, maybe be more of a people person because mm-hmm. now I'm able to deal with every type of personality that I've come across in those years. I've been around murderers, rapists, mm-hmm. kidnappers, drug addicts, kingpins, all types of people. So I've learned how to deal with them. But my father was a correction officer from 77 until 92. Then he left there and became a police officer. In my teens, I was running the streets. I was you know, hustling here and there, even though he was a police officer. So one time I got caught up in the gas station. I didn't get caught with anything, but the guy was arrested. He was holding on, you know, he ran my name. He said, oh, you said to such a son, ain't you? I'm like, yeah. He said, you know, you down here smoking dope because we're smoking a little bud. I said, man, you know, that's neither here or there or whatever. So he let us go. So I went to my mom's house like 2 days later, and he was on fire. I said, oh, so you want to be down in the drugs zone, huh? I said, man, Dad, he said, what you doing now? You need some extra money or something, what? I said, yeah, I mean, money is good. He's like, well, I got a job for you. Go down on West 3rd, boom, boom, ask the warden such and such. I go in there. I never knew this place existed. Mm-hmm. I knew he worked there and went there. But when I went inside these walls, I didn't know it was 2,500 people inside this building.
Wow.
So when he walked me through there, and as he walked me through, I could hear the guys inside the pod say, Dick P. P. Hey, hey, hey. I'm like, oh, shit, I ain't got this job. The warden said, you're perfect for this job.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He said, you know how to deal with these guys already.
Right. Hmm.
Question. I've always been curious about, was there a gang issue in the county jail?
With the inmates?
Yes. I've heard previously, like in the news, there was issues between rival gangs.
Well, no, not when I was working there. See, when I was working there, it is now. They actually got a whole floor, or from what I heard, they got a whole floor, either a whole pod full of the Heartless Felons, because they were actually taking over the jail.
Wow.
They would extort a lot of other inmates that was, you know, less aggressive. So you got a couple pods on there that's for the less aggressive guys and the older guys, or either if you choose an alternative lifestyle. So if you choose...
You're talking about homosexuals?
Homosexual.
Okay.
So you got less aggressive, which is usually homosexuals, or people that's coming to county for the first time and they never seen jail before, so they're in there, they shook. Mm-hmm. And then you got older guys that's maybe about 70, 80, 90 years old that's in there.
So that's the less aggressive.
Less aggressive. And they in dorms. They
what about heavily medicated? What don't they have their own?
There's a whole floor for that.
Whole floor for that too.
Yeah. You got a couple floors for it. But I was working there. Now it may be different, but when I was working in two floors, you had a psychiatric ward, and then you had a ward where you come in with medical issues. Like, you probably been shot before you came. You might have committed a crime and got shot, so now you got a bullet in your back or something. Mm-hmm. So the nurses got to be able to get to you quick.
Okay. How did you handle interactions with criminals that committed crimes that, like, go against your value system? Like a person, a pedophile, or someone who's maybe convicted of raping a child or something? Like, how did you handle that?
When I first started working there, one of the during orientation, which was maybe about orientation was like 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. One of the things we had to do was be put in a cell for a few hours. Wow. So we can know how it feels. And wasn't no place for me. But another thing is to understand that everybody's innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the county jail is for people that's going to court. You know, so they haven't been convicted. Mm-hmm. They've just been accused.
Okay.
So, and that's when I stopped believing the news a lot, too. Because when I actually talk, you could have been on the news for a high profile case. Now you come in here, you're on my pod, and me and you sitting here talking. And I pretty much, I can't say I trust everybody, but I can read you. Mm-hmm. Whether you did it, you know, whether it was maybe a reasonable doubt that you did it or not. So that's what the news over exaggerates. Mm-hmm. Just like when they give you an indictment, they overcharge you.
Okay. I also, something that's always concerned me, when it comes to the criminal justice system, how there's two different systems, one for those that are more wealthier mm-hmm. than those who are obviously come from poorer backgrounds, but then also how racial disparity plays into that. So you care to comment a little bit on that based on your own experience? Did you see like people of privilege treated different, or?
They either have the resources, which is bonfire, or top-notch lawyers. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't have the money to pay for a lawyer. You got a public defender. So a lot of the public defenders, they don't like taking those cases. You may get a rare one that really cares and is concerned about, mm-hmm. you know, some people and really want to help people. So, but they really want to be paid. What the county is paying them to take that case ain't what they really could take for it if they were going to get paid for it.
So do they rush through those cases, you think, or?
Quite sure. A lot of it is favor for a favor.
Favor for a favor, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
I owe you this one. You owe me that one.
Yeah.
And it can be crazy because the prosecutor may have let a high profile case slide through the last time as a favor because he owed the lawyer.
Oh, wow.
So it may have been a higher one where the dude was looking at maybe about 10 or 15 years, right? And probably only got 2 or 3 years, maybe just for the gun. They only got charged with the gun spec. Through the case, I gave him the gun spec 2 years. That's a win. That's a win.
Really?
So now this guy comes in and he get caught with, say, a half of a blunt that he was smoking and maybe 2 grams of crack that he was selling. And now he gets 5 or 6 years because he owed him back that favor.
Disparity. Oh, wow. That's the disparity you talk about.
Yeah, and we know that 90%+ of convictions are resolved via plea deal anyway, and probably because of part of what you're saying with the public defenders being overwhelmed.
Oh, yeah. Their case law just, you know, because there's so many people that can't afford lawyers. So you may be a public defender, and today the grand jury, they throw you over five cases on top of the cases you're getting paid from.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be an inmate that's paying this particular lawyer. So you be in the same pot with a guy. You're an inmate. And you be in a pot, and you say, well, yeah, I got Donald Butler. I paid him $20,000. You say, I got Donald Brother too. That's my public defender.
Yeah.
You like, right. Hold on. How the hell we get this? Well, I had to pay him $20,000 if he a public defender. So is he going to work better for me for the $20,000? Or is he not going to work for you at all for free?
Right.
Mm. Talk about the special response team.
SRT, huh?
Yeah.
Man in black.
That's...
Man in black.
Man in black.
So according to, like, recent articles in the news and that, especially with the current ongoing civil rights violation investigation, they were have been criticized for harassment, intimidation, abuse. This is all was discovered, findings of the U.S. Marshal report recently. Can you talk about that a little bit? Any opinions on that?
The cameras really fucked them up.
Okay.
They can't be men in black.
They can't be men in black with them cameras up there.
No, because... They coming aggressive. They coming. They, you in black, everything.
Yeah.
You tactical.
Gloves on.
Like you not coming. Shields, yeah. Helmets. And I've seen everybody's seen the YouTube videos of how men in black come in prisons to unruly. Yeah. Like so.
I mean, they're kind of like police officers on the streets. Like when police officers, they're not trained. When they pull their guns, they're not trained to detain you by shooting you. They're trained to kill.
Okay.
I mean, because it's they can beat the case better with somebody that can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
So up there, they got a pile where they divide them half with a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And behind that brick wall, you never know what goes on.
And that's where they go kick your ass at, huh? They don't drag you back there.
What?
And they looking, with the cameras, they probably still looking for blind spots to fuck somebody up. I mean, because, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So, if you have a correctional officer who been, you know, coming to an unruly situation for years, for years, and he coming, like, to detain you to... by any means, you know what I'm saying? And I've seen it. I've been in prison. So... if an officer coming to detain you by any means and you're being unruly, you spit on one of his fellow correction officers, they come through to detain you or get you together how they get you together. Now with cameras being in situation, it's like the Rodney King situation. They've been whooping motherfuckers' asses, but now it's on camera. So, you know what I'm saying? So men in black can't come up there and be aggressive how they, you know, supposed to be aggressive. Because, like, I mean, you got inmates, like you said, you got homosexuals, you got less aggressive, but you got murderers who know I'm guilty. I did this shit. I ain't coming home. And all through their county, all through their prison state, they trying to make everybody they come in contact with, they trying to make your situation like their situation. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, meaning like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to make you uncomfortable. I'm in here for life, so fuck you. Yeah. You know, he might smack you on your rear or something.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He might, yo, Dave, you been there, Dave, yeah, I've been peeing, you know, he cool, he good, you know what I'm saying? He the good CO, but at the end of the day, why you fucking with him? Because you got life on your hands, you facing life, so you're going to make it hard for him. So you might make it hard for him, or you might have a less aggressive inmate like we spoke about. Now you pulling tight on the less aggressive inmate, now you jump some off. Now men in black have to come up here, and we have cameras and stuff now.
And it's everywhere.
And it's everywhere.
Like you said, I've had some of my hardest times have been from the inmates that I know personally.
Mm-hmm.
Not the inmates that I just met in the jail, but inmates I've grown up with and they come through there. So, you know, it was an incident at this one time. Me and my best friend, we was working there. And we had some stuff that stemmed out into the streets from this.
From when you were?
At work.
Okay.
So, now, but me and my best friend, we like night and day. We like, you know, how you ever seen, you know, Outkast.
Yeah.
That big boy in Andre 3000.
Is this the guy, excuse me, I'm going to interrupt. Hold that thought. Is this the guy who you caught the situation with? Or
no.
Okay, someone else. I apologize.
See, in this situation, he's Andre 3000 and I'm big boy. All
right.
You seen the movie, Idlewild?
Yeah, I'm the one.
I'm going to be shooting the dice. Like, he's the one going to be his books reading and, and everything else. You know what I'm saying?
So, I get it.
So, we had this guy come in from our neighborhood, younger guy. And we didn't know him for real like that. We've seen him and said what's up to him. And, you know, in passing, you know, going into the same store, same restaurant in the neighborhood. So, he come in. He actually just came in from He had a warrant. He got into a fight in the bar. They wired his mouth up. Shut it up.
Police?
No, some dudes.
Oh, the dudes in this fight.
Dudes in the streets.
Okay.
So when he come in, you know, we got guys that have been on our pod for 6 months to 9 months to maybe a year.
Yeah.
And they call them pod fathers.
Right. Right. You know? I've heard that.
They call them pod fathers. And pod father has pretty much more leeway on the pod. They get cleaned up more.
Yeah.
They can stay at the cell a little bit longer. They may get double trays, either for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you know. They even help us. They just help us out a lot, you know. So yeah. we come to know them, you know. We were told not to get too comfortable with them, but that's not what we're doing. We just giving them a little bit of leeway. So the guy comes in. He we don't know the pie father. We know better than we know the guy that we grew up with now.
Yeah.
Because we spent more time with him in here personally than we spent more time with the guy we grew up with out in the streets. So when the guy comes in from the street that we know. He comes to the same pod where we have our pod father at.
Right.
So, you know, of course, you know, oh, yeah, we know, hey, give him an extra tray. This is my dude. You know,
it's for the youngster.
For the youngster.
All right.
So now he expecting it all the time. Now. Mm-hmm. So he see the pod father get it all the time. So he blow down on my guy like, man, why you ain't whoopee whoopee? Why I can't get like he get? So the pod father blew down on the guy and basically told him, you know, mind your motherfucking business.
Right. I put my work in. I've been in here. Like, yeah.
So they about to get into a fight.
This is an actual situation?
This is an actual situation.
Okay.
So my guy tells them, hey, y'all chill. He tell the guy, he said, man, your mouth wired up, man. Just chill. You don't want them to really do that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this was instead of y'all going to the hole, just go step in y'all rooms for the rest of the day.
Okay. Who chose to do that? Was it the correction officer?
Yeah, the correction officer.
Oh, he said just step in y'all rooms. Just put them on, knock them down for a second.
Yeah, cool them down.
Cool them down. I get it. Okay.
So now the guy that we know from the streets is yelling through the cells. Man, I'm going to fuck you up when I get out of here. I'm going to whoop-de-whoop and blase Skippy in. I'm going to sick my niggas on you, whatever. So my dude sent him to the hole now.
This is another CO?
Yeah, he
sent the youngster to the hole?
Yeah, no. Okay. All right, let me rewind. He sent him in the cell for the rest of the day.
Right.
We go home at 6, boom.
Okay.
I get a phone call on the streets for some dudes on a higher level right now in the streets from his neighborhood.
Oh, it reached the streets.
So, P, who is such and such talking about my mans that I work with? Man, I said, who you with right now? So he said a name that the person he said he was with knew us. So I said, ask such and such who you just asked me about. So the guy told me, he said, oh, he don't fuck with nobody. If anything happened, somebody was messing with him. That's why he sent him to, that's why he locked him down. So the high ranking dude, like, all right, man, I ain't thinking with nothing, man. Don't worry about it. So I called my dude. You know these niggas don't call these niggas out in the streets? And they just called me asking about you? He said, did they? So we get to work the next day. He tells supervisors. They sent him to the hole. In a report, it's saying that he threatened the correction officer. So now you're up there on the 10th floor with the man in black. They read the report. Oh, you threatened our coworker. What you think happened?
I absolutely want to know what happened. Tune in to the next episode to find out.